Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. I'm Beecher.
And I'm April.
And just to recap, for those that are listening weekly, last time we left off with our proposal video going viral. So we were on Fox and Friends and a bunch of news outlets and the 700 Club, which once again, that is part of our opening intro sound.
Yeah, it just furthered our whole evangelical darling thing because it was just pretty much Fox News and 700 Club and The Blaze, mm-hmm. Glenn Beck. I mean, we did get BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed gives us a little bit of redemption.
And MSN Australia.
That's true.
Go MSN Australia. Anyway, so this week we're going to be talking about our engagement season all the way through our wedding. I mean, this is called the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast, so we're actually mm-hmm. getting to the married part this yeah. episode. So if you've been sticking around, you have made it to the actual title being relevant.
Yeah, everyone's like, I can't believe these two are getting married. They're so dysfunctional. Yes.
So April, when we were first talking about the wedding, this is right after we got engaged. How were you feeling about, the cost of it?
Yeah, I know where you're getting at. So when I finally came down the high of I have a diamond on my finger and I just went viral, which if you know me at all, I like being in the spotlight a little bit. So the viral fame definitely was enjoyed by me. But I come down from this high and Beecher and I start talking logistics of the wedding and how to pay for it. And then I'm remembering all these traditions of the wedding that the bride's family pays for it. And my mom at this point is a widow. My dad had just died a year and a half earlier. And I start freaking out. Because I started looking at prices of weddings, in my head, a wedding wouldn't cost more than $2,000 or $3,000, because where would that money even go?
I remember the very first time we talked about it. This might have actually been right before we got engaged, but when I told April that it was going to cost $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 for a wedding, April was like, "No way, we are not paying more than $3,000 for this." And then she goes, and I said, "Well, what about food? That's going to cost more than that alone." And one thing you said on the phone, you said, "I will literally drive to McDonald's and pick up the hamburgers myself, but I'm not paying more than $3,000 for a wedding."
Yeah, it really blew my mind how much money people spend on weddings. I had never looked into it. I was not one of those girls that thoroughly like planned out her wedding or the dress or anything. The only thing that I pictured was my dad was going to walk me down the aisle and my dad was going to dance with me. I didn't even picture my husband or my ring. And so like the one thing I pictured, I couldn't get. So
yeah, and you're thinking of your mom. So I get it.
Right.
But there really was this freak out over the wedding and April was in a lot of distress. I was freaking out too, because I was like, oh my goodness, if this is how it's going, just starting talking about our wedding planning, like this is going to be really difficult. And another kind of God moment, so to speak. At this point, once again, I'm definitely, I'm my head's above water. I'm not dealing with dysphoria as much, but I'm still very much like praying hours a day. I have like several devotionals that are like being sent to my phone every day. And one was from Joseph Prince Ministries. I've actually not looked into him. I was never really a huge fan, so to speak, but a friend of mine recommended it. So I signed up for that. Anyways, on that Sunday, it was mm-hmm. the next morning after we'd had that conversation, I was in Georgia, she was in Texas, and I opened the devotional and the entire thing is just about how God will provide for your wedding and you shouldn't worry about costs. So we'd had a fight over this McDonald's hamburger, our wedding's not going to cost more than $1,000. And the next morning I got this super specific devotional. And I went back and looked at all the devotionals and they were all really vague things. And this was specifically about a wedding and how God will provide. And I was like, I texted to April and I was just overwhelmed. Like once again, I was like, okay, God, once again, like, I think we're supposed to get married. So yeah. Like, you're going to provide. And
I remember you forwarded that to me and I just cried because mm-hmm. I felt really alone already with my dad not being there for mm-hmm. this big moment of my life. And it was just kind of like, oh, well, I still have God the Father. But yeah, but we really did. I mean, it definitely cost more than $3,000. But overall, we, because two wedding venues got into kind of a bidding war to have us there, because I pitched it like, we'll market it. Because at the time, we were still going viral. And I was like, listen, we've got a TV appearance on the 700 Club, and I will mention this, you know, if you get us a good deal, the venue. And so we got a decent, like, bare minimum costs, and they threw in all the extra stuff for free.
And like at the church we were at, there's a couple that went and paid for our wedding cake.
They did it anonymously.
We found out later who it was, and we're very grateful for it. But like, we were provided for. The DJ was from our church. It really helped that we had a church at the time. And once again, we've deconstructed a lot of things about church, but there's a community aspect that really came around us in this season. And it was
Nice. There is a lot of community in churches. When you're in the community, they are good about taking care of their own community.
Yeah, the people that we are around. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that this season was really difficult on a grief level for you.
Yeah. So I think we mentioned in the last episode that I was going to start counseling, even though I was against it initially. So right before we got engaged, I had started seeing a counselor, mainly for grief counseling, because I didn't know how to process just all the feelings that I was dealing with, not just with grief, but really it had started my deconstruction, because I believed that my dad was going to be healed of cancer, and then he wasn't. And so not only was I grieving losing him, but also kind of grieving this really strong belief that I had that God would just answer your prayer if you just had enough faith. So I started going to counseling, and it was the same counselor that Beecher had, actually. Mm-hmm. And so her goal was just to get us both individually to a healthy enough place where we could get married. And I guess we barely made it healthy enough to get married. But yeah, so I started dealing with that, and there was a lot of pain with planning a wedding, you know, knowing that I wouldn't have my dad, you know, to dance with or to walk me down the aisle. And
I mean, I just remember as we tried to make wedding decisions and talk about the wedding, it was just very emotional for you. And I was surprised, because April in general is pretty chill. I was up until this point the emotional all over the place one in the relationship. But I remember one night, I don't know if you remember this, but like the hardest I've ever seen you cry was when you finally, I think, realized that like your dad wasn't going to be there.
Right.
Well, and it was tied up in a number of other conversations, but the moment that you realize like what the why this wedding meant so much, because as you said, you didn't dream about the
wedding. Well, I was getting caught up in sides, because you had a very large family and my family had been decreasing, because I had lost my grandfather and my dad in the same year. And I was just realizing, oh, I'm going to be so lonely. And it was just this feeling of like, I don't want to feel like a stranger at my own wedding, because it's all of your side of people and like barely a few people. And then I just realized the root of it was just I miss my dad.
Yeah. And it was something that we had to confront in this season. And then how did that go with you, with counseling, with grief, by the time the wedding happened?
I mean, by the time we got to the wedding, I really do think the wedding day was very joyous. And my biggest fear was that, because I initially didn't even want you to dance with your mom, because I was like, I'm going to have to leave and cry, because we had gone to a few weddings prior, and anytime the bride danced with her father, like, I had to leave because I just started crying. But that didn't happen. And yeah, overall it was joyous. And it was cool, though, because where we ended up getting married was called Founders Inn, which is on Regent's campus. So we were like the poster children for Regent. But it was my dad had actually walked me down this exact path, because he came to visit me for a preview weekend of Regent when I was thinking about going there for grad school. And so him and I actually walked out there to like look at the water and stuff. So I felt his presence there, even though he wasn't.
It was wild that the path that you walked at the wedding, you had walked with your dad just years before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so while you were dealing with grief and going to therapy for that, once again, I was not as focused on April's past, but I was still repressing a lot sexually and with my gender. And so this season of us being engaged, we had fully committed our lives to each other. We were ready to get married. I begged April, like, let's just go to the courthouse tomorrow, then we can do the big ceremony. Oh, yeah. Because at least I was very, very, very much ready to mm-hmm. have sex. I was very much ready to, like, okay, but I couldn't, because I felt so guilty if I crossed any boundaries until I was married.
Well, and mine was twofold, because I hated the idea of going down to a courthouse, even though I wanted to have sex. But in my head, I was doing better, but I still felt a lot of shame around the fact that I had had sex already. And it was almost like, this is my chance at redemption, that I can still have my honeymoon night, and, you know, where we have sex for the first time that night. And I was just holding on to this belief that that was what a good Christian girl should have.
Yeah, so we were together a lot. I was sleeping on an air mattress at April's apartment a mm-hmm. lot, because we just didn't want to leave each other. We were ready to be married.
I will say during this time, we started crossing a little bit more boundaries. We never had sex, but we knew we were getting married, and so it was hard to just not do things.
For an example, just if you're wondering what a boundary was, literally, like, we would make out very heavily with clothes on, and I would get off and like in my jeans, like while we were like grinding and like but I'm saying this now because it's so ridiculous.
I know.
And like, that would cause me to just spiral, because I'd be so upset. Like, I can't believe I did that. That was so, I really wanted to save everything for marriage. And so then I would cry and be upset. April would feel guilty. And this cycle was just like constant, because we both couldn't stay away from each other. Yet mm-hmm. we both had such ridiculous boundaries.
Right. And so in this season, it kind of goes back to where Beecher was initially, where they blamed me for crossing the boundaries, which is a little patriarchal purity culture, which we both still had. So in this season, like, we crossed boundaries, and every single time we would do something, any semi-sexual, Beecher would just have a breakdown afterwards and then blame me and put a lot of shame on me that I was doing this to them. And it, as a result, I just completely shut down my sexuality and started saying no, like, not even just no to sex, but just no to anything, because I was tired of the repercussion of what happened if we were to engage in that.
I mean, I wanted it so badly. I wanted to be intimate so badly. And if April gave any hint that she wanted that also, it was too much for me to bear. So, yeah, it was in the engaged season that April... you just kind of shut it down. Like, you didn't, if you did have a desire for me, you didn't make it known. And you also went on birth control at this time, kind of getting ready for when we got married.
And I noticed that my sexual desire for Beecher had kind of diminished, and I blamed it on the birth control. But I do think, now with hindsight and having gone through counseling, this became a problem in our marriage later on mm-hmm. because it was directly tied to just not feeling safe around Beecher because of what would happen when we did something sexual.
Yeah, no, this season and the pattern that I inflicted on our relationship hurt us for years. Years. And so it was really in this season that, sexually, April kind of shut down. I noticed. I was kind of grateful in the moment, because then I wasn't, I was tempted to break my really mm-hmm. strict boundaries, but... in the long run, it didn't help. I will say, on another front, I think, in marriage, with marriage approaching, April and I guess we both did, we had this idea of marriage and being a husband and wife that you cut off your one-on-one relationships with the other gender.
The opposite sex.
Yeah. And so for me, it was, okay, I have these four friends that are like some of my best friends in the world, and they're girls that I went to college with, and I called them and talked to them and text them. And like, it was like a ongoing relationship. And one of the really hard conversations and themes of our engaged period is kind of April asking me to give those up, that I could see them in groups of people. But
well, because for me, like, I naturally gave up. I had relationships with guys before we, like, that were friends, and I stopped talking to them one-on-one, really, or just because I was like, that's just what you do. Because also purity culture and just patriarchy in general and just gender roles, I was always taught, like, it's impossible. You can't be friends with the opposite sex. There's always going to be sexual tension there from at least one party. And so I thought it would be impossible for Beecher to actually have a genuine, like, non-sexual and platonic relationship with these girls that sometimes Beecher would call and talk on the phone for like an hour. And mm-hmm. I was also insecure at the time because it didn't make sense to me. So, and also, but it wasn't just that, because in those moments when you would kind of blame me, you would use these four friends of yours who were girls as almost like, you know, well, they haven't had sex and, you know, why can't you be more like them? So I also had built up a little bit of resentment because I was being compared to them as like, these were these great Christian girls that you didn't have feelings for, but I was being pitted against them. So it made me resent them and made me be like, no, if we're going to work out, like, you can't be that close with them.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure I said things like that. I said a lot of awful things in that summer of hell. That did not help the case. But regardless, that was for me, I mean, once again, the things that helped me with my dysphoria are being able to present more feminine, when I feel like it. And also my friendships with women that are just friendships. No, nothing sexual, nothing romantic about it. And I feel like those four girls that I was friends with were, kind of my window into the feminine, so to speak, because I wasn't allowing myself to wear anything. And so when April was like, you know, hey, we need to give up these relationships. And once again, April is giving up, you know, friendships with guys one-on-one, which, you know, was easier for her. But when she asked me to give up those friendships, I lost it. I got very, very upset because I felt like, once again, it was just a really difficult thing for me to process. Now I know why, but in the moment, April didn't understand why, and I didn't even totally understand why.
I knew that you had this gendered thing going on, but we still didn't really know what it was. And at this point, we were pretending it, or at least hoping that it had mostly disappeared. So in my head, you were still this typical male that only had one desire when it came to women, and that was to get into their pants, because that was what I believed, which is why, you know, I saw myself as a sexual object and saw other women as a sexual object, even though in my head I knew that it was wrong. But this led to Beecher kind of spiraling one night and going to this dark place, to where Beecher, and this was in person, because I think this was might have been one of the first times that you said really hurtful things to me in person, where most of it was over text or in the phone. And I don't even remember exactly what you said, but I know something along the lines that you told me that I was ruining your life, and referenced my past and my sins, and was just kind of starting to go on this like OCD tangent. And I remember in my head, I was like, no, I'm not going to be spoken to like this. And I actually slapped Beecher straight across the face. Like, it was a good slap, too.
And I responded by smiling because I was so caught off guard. It kind of worked. We still laughed about it. It worked.
And then we laughed, and then you like kind of snapped out of it, because you were definitely in like this OCD tangent, and you were just saying hurtful things. Like, no, it was just like I'd finally hit a breaking point. I was like, I'm not going to accept this. And
it definitely, we still talk about it. The only time April has ever slapped me, ever,
it's the only time I've ever slapped anybody.
Oh wow, there we go. I have that honor.
Have you slapped anybody?
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. So
but I will say that giving up the friends that are girls, and this was like, you know, now we're 2 weeks before the wedding, I was going to go through with it because I loved April. And once again, I felt called by God to marry April. But I will say I was starting to not look forward to it because, once again, the ask to give up those friendships was a lot for me to handle. And so I think that it got me. And once again, I was just not looking forward to the wedding and not looking forward to being married, because I felt like I'd be more trapped than
I remember trying to get you to make decisions with the wedding, and you were just checked out.
Well, yeah, well, that's also because as a man, quote unquote, I'm not supposed to care. So like my role is that I don't care about this. Mm. And like, that's what I had to do, you know, like, because I thought this is me being the most masculine I can. Right. Where if we got married, you know, 6 months from now, I would absolutely have more say. Because I would be like, no, let's do this. I want this. I actually think this.
Oh,
let's
also do this. Remember this gendered thing that I hated. I mean, I liked it because I enjoyed opening presents, but I did not like the bridal showers, because now I've been to a couple where it was a couple shower, but then, you know, certain people in our families are just very traditional in their roles. So I had a very traditional bridal shower where like all these women I had two bridal showers, one in Texas and one in Georgia. And I remember the whole time being like, I wish Beecher was here and that it wasn't just me opening sheets and plates in front of a bunch of women.
And it's funny because April would be like, I hate this. I hate bringing all these women. Even at this point, I would even say things like, well, I wouldn't mind it. Like, I think that'd be fun. She's like, no. And I was like, no, okay. And of course, there's the man that nobody does anything for me, even though I would have been the one that enjoyed it more.
Right. Yeah. It was so great, which it just engendered, this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I've always hated women's events, like women's church events. And I remember ranting about them to you and you being so confused. But I also
hated men's events. And so we'd almost be like, well, I hate men's events because yada, yada, yada. And she's like, I hate women's events because yada, yada, yada. And we'd be like, you want to switch? Even back then we joked about it.
I was like, yes, I do want to switch.
I would have switched in a heartbeat. Yeah, I was having second thoughts, even though, I never was not going to go through with it, but I was having second thoughts with the wedding approaching, and April and I decided to see a movie just on a whim called The Fault in Our Stars, and it's a great movie, great soundtrack, you should check that out.
Romantic movie,
and it's about a relationship of, like, high schoolers where they both have, like, terminal illnesses. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into anything necessarily more than that to spoil it. It's a great movie. Check it out. But I remember after that, I was just bawling. And I was so grateful to have April here with me and to be able to spend my life with her and that it didn't have a deadline, so to speak. And it really did. Like, movies, I will say, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a screenwriter. There have been several movies in my life that literally changed the trajectory of my emotional arc. And that was one of those movies. And you saw a difference, right?
Oh, yeah. I actually thought there was a moment where I was like, I don't know if we're going to make it to the wedding. Because it was between the slap. It was like shortly after when I slapped you and we saw this film. And then afterwards, yeah, it was a huge difference. Beecher suddenly was looking forward to marrying me and you got way more lovey-dovey and like excited about the wedding. And yeah, it was really good. And I was excited to marry you too. It was interesting though, because during this time, I had this like inner fear in my gut that I wouldn't be able to be sexually attracted to you anymore because I had shut it down and I wasn't feeling it. Like, I was attracted to you, but it wasn't like it was. And so I had blamed it on the birth control, but I had this like fear that I didn't tell anybody, but I was just like, I remember dreading our wedding night because I didn't know once we had sex, like I just didn't know what would happen. And I had a lot of fear around how you would react once we did that, even though it would have been, you know, not a sin.
Well, I mean, I was dreading the wedding night as well, which we'll get to what that experience was. But I was dreading the wedding night because once again, I wasn't sure that I worked right. I just had so much insecurity. And I remember I actually had a dream, and I talked about it with Liz during this season, where
Liz is your counselor.
Yes. Where we have sex on our first night after the wedding. It doesn't go great. April rejects me. And then I go out and like jump off a balcony. Like it was like, it was really, I was really scared of being intimate, fully intimate, fully free with someone and being rejected or not working right. And so.
Well, and I remember too, you had even mentioned that you had a lot of fear wrapped up and you really wanted to be the best partner that I'd had, even though I'd only had sex with one other person. You were really like honed in on that. Like, you was like, you better be the better sex. So that put pressure on me to like, even if this is not as good as, you know, like I have to at least act like it or you're going to spiral.
That's true. It's true. So yeah, so we'll get to the wedding night in a second, but we should probably hit on the wedding.
Okay,
so
yes.
The actual wedding event was great. I was adamant that April do a first look with me.
I was insecure
and I needed April to say that we're going through this because I was once again still so insecure. So we did a first look and April was gorgeous and
I didn't want to do it.
We had fun with our bridesmaids, groomsmen, which can we just say, I looking back cannot stand how gendered weddings are.
Oh yeah.
That like I would have absolutely had some girls in my groom's people.
Oh, and I would have had some guys. I would have had my brothers on my side.
I know. And I will say that I don't get dysphoric over many things in our house, but one thing that I actually did find a little dysphoric is a picture of me and all of my groomsmen standing there because we're all in suits and I just look at it, I'm like, oh yeah, like that was the role I was playing back then. Whereas like I would have loved to be there with the guys that are with me, but also some of my girlfriends and I would have loved been wearing something that I was actually happy about and that I felt good in. So I literally, that's one of the only photos that I don't have out. because it is just so gendered. But besides that, and I don't think I even registered with me on the day, mm-hmm. our wedding went really smoothly, right?
It did. The weather was beautiful. It was an outdoor wedding in June. And there were birds, and we had done something fun. Because I remember in my head, I was like, I don't want this to be a sad day, so I'm going to just put as much joy into it as I can. And one thing that I had always wanted to do that we did was we actually had a good friend of ours choreograph our first dance. Yeah. And then we had our whole wedding party join us at the very end. At the time, the What Does the Fox Say song was very popular.
We will post our first dance in the show notes.
Yeah, so I had bought these really cheap animal masks, and I gave them all to our wedding party. And so they joined us at the end to do the fox dance. So
it was fun. I put together a video of our relationship, which actually I might even be able to put that in the show notes.
Oh,
we'll
yeah,
see.
That's probably there too.
But yeah, it was fun. It was a good night. And
my brothers walked me down the aisle, mm-hmm. and that was cool because I've talked a little bit about it, but we traveled a lot. So my brothers really were my best friends. So it was cool to have them walk me down.
Yeah. And the audio from our wedding is what we use in the intro for the show. I mean, mm-hmm. it's probably pretty obvious, but that's the actual audio from our wedding 8 yeah. years ago.
That's true. I remember we did communion as part of our ceremony, and Beecher took way too big of a piece of bread.
Yeah, we did with like bread and wine, and I did way too much bread.
You were
chewing
for like 5 minutes.
I was freaking out because I'm like, I got a line coming up, and I got this bread in my mouth. Yeah, it was one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good day. It was a lot of fun. We danced until really late, and then I remember we didn't go straight to our hotel room. Because we had an exit, so we pretended to go leave, and we went to this gas station like
we bought Gatorades
a mile
at a gas
down.
Station,
yeah. We went and bought some Gatorades, and the guy that checked us out, he was like, "Oh, y'all just got married?" Because I was in my dress, and Beecher was in their tux. So, And then we went back to the hotel room, and I remember just being so anxious.
I was anxious. I was anxious too, but I will say that. I worked properly.
You did.
You know, I mean, it wasn't necessarily the most fun or enjoyable, but for me, I was so relieved afterwards mm-hmm. because I was like, oh, I work. Like
you
it was,
did work.
It was so for me, that first night, once again, it wasn't like this transcendent experience. It was like almost like, you know, going up to bat in softball and actually like mm-hmm. making contact where your bat actually hits the ball and you're like, oh, I didn't strike out. Like I could hit the ball. Yeah. I'll get better, hopefully, but I hit it.
And I remember I did feel a little bit cool. I don't know if cool is the right word, but like I had done the right Christian thing because I remember someone had told me, and I don't know how true this is. I really need to look this up. But like once you have sex and then if you stop having sex for a long time, that you, I don't know if this is TMI for a podcast.
Go for it.
But you actually like would get smaller down there so that it could actually hurt again if you had sex later. And I remember it wasn't the most comfortable at first. And so I was like, oh, it's like I had a real wedding night, which is, you know, it was awkward and not fun. Like all my friends had told me.
So I was relieved that it just worked correctly. April was relieved that it hurt. It lasted what? I mean.
It wasn't very long.
No, it's not long at all. And so then we go to Jamaica the next day, which that is just, I mean, doing a honeymoon right after a mm-hmm. wedding, you're around all the people that you know and love from all aspects of your life. And then immediately you're in another country and you don't know anyone except just the partner you're with.
Mm-hmm. Who you're still kind of getting to know.
Those ways. And so we're like, okay, we're in Jamaica and, you know, did an all-inclusive resort. And I remember thinking like honeymoon, we have sex all the time, like 3-4 times a day. Like I was like, let's go. And April did not have that same mentality.
No, I was like at multiple times a day. I think we did it twice in one day, one time.
We did.
We did lots of shuffleboard.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cause sex did not take long. So we were getting that over. Even we do it twice a day where it's over pretty fast and we're not adventurous because we're just
adventurous. And I was still dealing with, which I know now, but at the time I didn't know, but I was just like, get it over with cause I was realizing that if I thought too much about sex and sexuality, there was just a lot of pain registered. One having to do with the assault and having to deal with like the negative reaction that I got from you from it. So I've talked to my therapist in the last couple weeks, my new therapist, and realized that for the first several years of our marriage, which we'll probably get into more, but like I would have like dissociative episodes in sex.
Yeah, so April's mentality on the honeymoon was, let's get it over. My mentality was, okay, that wasn't great, so let's try it again.
Yeah, and mine was like, that wasn't great, so let's take a break.
Yeah, and so in the next episode, you'll see this cycle play out to its obvious ends as we were married and living together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a lot of shuffleboard. We joke about how much shuffleboard we played.
We did a couple cool things. We did snorkeling and... Yeah. You know, we tried drinking. I will say it was an all-inclusive resort, and it just, has nothing to do with non-binary marriage, but I swear that they water those things down. Because I had three pina coladas and just felt nothing.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we went back to the room. Shuffleboard was a big thing, and then we went back to the room every night, watched TV, and ordered cheese fries delivered to our room.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Watched movies. We were in our room by like 8 o'clock because we were just so worn out from the wedding and honestly probably just all the emotional trauma we had put each other through over the last year.
So overall, I feel like this episode was a little bit lighter.
And not as heavy on the details.
Yeah. Well, this season was a little bit lighter. It was still difficult, but a little bit lighter. So on the next episode, we are going to get into marriage because, right, we just went on the honeymoon and now we are living together. April is my same height, same waist. I have not put on women's clothes since fifth grade, and now I have access to it. And obviously, I'm going to be home alone a lot because I'm still in grad school and April has a full-time job Monday through Friday. So that's just a small taste of the... of the next episode where we get into really our first couple years of marriage before kids.
Yeah. Ugh. It's hard going back to this time because it's just like going back to a season where I wasn't really sure of who I was. You definitely weren't sure of who you were. And we were just navigating waters, which maybe is any relationship, but just how, you know, rocky some of the seasons were.
Yeah, well, we'll get into it next time on the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. Thank you for all the emails and messages that so many of you have sent us. It is an amazing feeling to once again realize that we're not alone and that there are so many people out there that have similar stories to us, and that's trans and non-binary people, but it's also just couples reaching out to us saying that the gender norms, the gender boxes that they're fitting in doesn't work for them on an individual level and doesn't work for them on a relationship level.
So if you want to send us an email, you can email us nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com. And at the end of this, we will do like a Q&A. So if you have any questions specifically, we'll do our frequently asked questions. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see y'all next time.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April A. Joy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.